This is a special episode of Washington Today. During this week's Democratic National Convention, our podcast is our post-convention coverage with analysis on the day's events.
Our campaign 2020 coverage continues. C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of politics.
On this day three of the DNC convention, the Democrats making their case against President Trump and for the nominee Joe Biden. This is a live view outside the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware, where Kamala Harris made it official as the vice presidential nominee. Tomorrow night, Joe Biden will accept the nomination. He'll do so in Wilmington, Delaware. In just a moment, we'll get the perspective of former Republican Congressman Tom Davis of Virginia and Florida Democrat Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz joining us from her home in her district. But first, Emily Larson, who's been keeping track of all of this for the Washington Examiner. And I want to begin with the speech by Senator Kamala Harris. For those voters who still may be undecided, did she move the needle? Did she sway those undecided voters?
Well, she certainly hopes she did. I'm not sure if we can really tell at this point if she swayed the needle. It'll be interesting to see, actually, in the age of these virtual conventions, whether either candidate gets a convention bump in the polls, as we've seen in previous cycles. But she did do a very good job of introducing herself, going through her own personal history, connecting that to other people in the country and women, mentioning all of the women who came before her that she is building on, really connecting to a lot of these overarching themes of the night, including making sure that the Democrats carry on the legacy of the civil rights movement and continue to do that work. That was a very big theme of the night, that whatever happens after this November 3rd election, that there's a lot more work to be done.
Let's go to the part of her speech earlier tonight from Wilmington, Delaware, and Senator Kamala Harris.
My mother taught me that service to others gives life purpose and meaning. And oh, how I wish she were here tonight, but I know she's looking down on me from above. I keep thinking about that 25-year-old Indian woman, all of 5 feet tall, who gave birth to me at Kaiser Hospital in Oakland, California. On that day, she probably could have never imagined that I would be standing before you now and speaking these words. I accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States of America.
And so that moment, Emily Larson, as she tried to not only weave in her own narrative, but also talk about Joe Biden and why she is ready to take the job on day one.
Yes, and she really leaned into the historic nature of her nomination. She is the third woman to be a vice presidential nominee on a major party ticket. And she is the first minority woman to be a major nominee on a major party ticket. One of the things in that clip that you just played that I found a little bit interesting, aside from that, was I couldn't help but wonder if that subtle mention of being born in Oakland, California to her immigrant mother was a subtle jab at the conspiracy theories or arguments about natural-born citizenship that we've been hearing over the last week that President Trump has entertained when he's been asked about it in press conferences.
We also heard from Gabby Giffords, who was injured in her district in which she was in Arizona, and also the Violence Against Women Act and Joe Biden's role in the U.S. Senate. So what part of those narratives do you think resonated with the viewers who watched tonight?
Yeah, I think that sequence, along with some of the other digitally produced sequences, altogether were pretty powerful. That's one of the advantages of having a virtual convention, is that you can put together these very succinct packages and edit them with emotional music and deliver them in such a way that you don't have to worry about whether or not a crowd is going to respond to it. So, I mean, Gabby Giffords, her husband, Mark Kelly, is running for Senate in Arizona. So it was an interesting choice to feature her, not only for that reason, but which she didn't even mention, but because she is such a prominent figure when the Democrats are talking about gun violence and the horrific attack that she suffered. Being shot and surviving that and overcoming that. So that was a very important moment, something that they opened up with at this convention, talking about gun violence.
And finally, do you have a sense in terms of the viewership of this convention and whether or not it's going to change the poll numbers by the end of the week?
Well, I mean, the viewership of this convention has been down on the network since the last convention 4 years ago, but that could be a number of things, not only coronavirus making things a little bit less exciting, but just a decline in television viewership overall. People less inclined to tune in for the full 2 hours and getting more of their news in short clips on the internet and online.
Emily Larson, who's covering all of this for the Washington Examiner, will check in with you again tomorrow. Thanks for being part of C-SPAN's coverage.
Thank you.
We want to introduce you to a current and former member of Congress, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat from South Florida, and Tom Davis, former Republican congressman from Virginia. To both of you, thanks very much for being with us. And Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the optics tonight certainly very different from what you're used to as a former DNC chair. You know what it takes to put a convention together.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the privilege of presiding over two conventions, and both the preparation and execution. And this one very much looks different, feels different. But I really have been so impressed with the way the production has played out, and that they've taken advantage of the opportunity to really reach so many more people and have appeal to a much broader range of people than you can when, you know, you're having to play to the audience in the hall and also to a more narrow television audience based on the network's decision on how much programming they're going to put on TV. So I really think it's been a pretty special and incredible and technologically impressive effort that has really, I think, touched a lot of people.
Congressman Tom Davis, your thoughts about tonight, your takeaway.
Well, first of all, let me just say it's a pleasure to appear with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We were both campaign leaders. Me, as you know, is a Republican House campaign chairman, and Debbie is the Democratic National Chairman. But just for your viewers who may not know, Debbie knew when politics stopped and governing began and had a great reputation for working with Republicans after the election and still does to try to get things done. So, Debbie, it's a pleasure to be here with you. Look, I think this is it's kind of surreal to watch this compared to what we're used for with the hoopla of campaigns. And I felt, in a way, Kamala Harris kind of got cheated out of what could have been a more magic moment with the hoopla of the crowd and the cheering and the historic part of her candidacy for vice president. Viewership is down, but, you know, with the internet now and clips floating around, we'll see what the effect is. Democrats don't really need that. At this point, they need to unite their base. The polls show them up. I haven't seen a national poll that shows Biden down in the last couple months. So the key for them is to try to hold their coalition together before the race really gets underway in September and to get their vote out. And I think that was their message tonight. I think the last couple nights was kind of a bipartisan play. You had Kasich and Governor Whitman and others talking about Biden uniting. Tonight, they're a little more red meat on there. But again, they've got their coalition. They need to keep it together at this point. And, you know, I think tonight accomplished that.
Tom Davis, you talk about red meat. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I want to get your reaction to what former President Barack Obama said earlier tonight, his speech at the American Revolution Museum in Philadelphia. And at times, you had a real sense of just how personal this was to him. Let's watch.
I did hope, for the sake of our country, that Donald Trump might show some interest in taking the job seriously, that he might come to feel the weight of the office and discover some reverence for the democracy that had been placed in his care. but he never did. For close to 4 years now, he has shown no interest in putting in the work, no interest in finding common ground, no interest in using the awesome power of his office to help anyone but himself and his friends. No interest in treating the presidency as anything but one more reality show that he can use to get the attention he craves. Donald Trump hasn't grown into the job because he can't.
Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, that's one of the moments that has gone viral on the C-SPAN websites tonight. What do you think?
Well, it's gone viral with good reason. The president's message, President Obama's message tonight was what so many are feeling, and that is that Donald Trump has let us down. I am quite sure, having worked with President Obama, that who deeply cared about making sure that he met the moment and that he could be a healer in chief when we needed it, and thought about the long-term and the short-term ramifications of his decisions. We have a president who at every turn, particularly in the midst of a pandemic crisis that has spiraled out of control, and where now over 170,000 people are dead and a virus is continuing to run rampant through our country, we have a president who has refused to quarterback the solution, refused to step up and make sure that we could lessen the economic impact. I mean, at every turn, whether it's racial division or the devastating policies related to our environment, I mean, this is a president who not only hasn't met the moment, but has really pulled the rug out from so many Americans. And the contrast was very clear and very starkly laid out tonight for so many.
Tom Davis, can you recall a former president talking about a successor in those terms tonight?
No, I can't. There have certainly been former presidents who didn't like their successors or didn't like what was going on, but I've never heard it, put out front like that and articulated in such a way. But I think in a way this talks about the Trump presidency and certainly how one element of the population, particularly Democrats, and in some cases people who consider themselves institutionalists, view him, and that is a personal campaign against Donald Trump rather than running on the issues. If you listen to John Kasich, so much of that was more personal. He didn't go after Trump on issues. He said, well, Biden's acceptable. So I think that is an element of the Democratic campaign. And when you look at the polling, or at least as I look at the polling, so much of Biden's strength is is people who just don't like Donald Trump personally. I think if this becomes an issue-oriented campaign in a very closely divided country, this becomes a much more different race. To date, Joe Biden hasn't had to step out in front on issues. I mean, he's issued policy statements here or there, but hasn't had to undergo the day-to-day questioning you get from the press and the back and forth that you get in campaigns with charges back and forth. And that works to his advantage because you have a president who's never been above water, and his favorables been above his unfavorables not one day since he took office. And that goes back to the fact that he's a very polarizing figure in American politics.
Tom Davis, the week began with your friend, former Ohio Governor John Kasich, supporting Joe Biden. Tonight we heard from Elizabeth Warren talking about health care and equal opportunities as well as corporate greed.
Well, I think this comes down to which Joe Biden, who's the real Joe Biden at the end? Is it the Joe Biden that John Kasich and Governor Whitman and others envision, who's a healer, or is this the Joe Biden that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren talk about that's going to move together a progressive agenda? And I suspect if he wins, that will be the tug of war within the governing coalition and he's already moved a bit left as the party becomes more, the Republicans continue to move right and Democrats continue to move left at this point. But look, that's what campaigns are about. And if Vice President Biden can stay on his message, I think he's going to be fine. But campaigns test that in so many different ways, and we'll see where it goes.
In 2004 in Boston, State Senator Barack Obama said it wasn't a red America or a blue America, but it was a red, white, and blue America. Another moment from his speech tonight in which there seem to be echoes of his entry into national politics in 2004.
None of this should be controversial. These shouldn't be Republican principles or Democratic principles. They are American principles. But at this moment, this president and those who enable him have shown they don't believe in these things. Tonight, I'm asking you to believe in Joe and Kamala's ability to lead this country out of these dark times and build it back better.
Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, were there echoes of Boston from 16 years ago in that excerpt?
You know, that was the year I was elected to Congress, and I was at that convention. It was I've been to many conventions at that point, but that was my first one as a candidate for Congress, and that was one of the most remarkable speeches I've heard. And for sure tonight, and the whole theme of the evening was bringing America together in a more perfect union. The issues that were laid out tonight, whether it was domestic violence or making sure that we address and arrest global warming and climate change, or childcare that is so absolutely critical to the ability of families to be able to make ends meet and be able to make sure that they can take care of their children, to gun violence and domestic violence. So this was a unifying theme this evening that I think really effectively reached so many voters, particularly women. And it was also wonderful for me both to see one of my dearest friends, Gabby Giffords, having made so much progress. I've been with her, you know, through so many of those moments that were shown on screen through her recovery. And then also to hear from Emma Gonzalez when she narrated that gun violence video, Emma being from my home county, you know, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas is just up the road from my home. We have to make sure that we have a president, and we will have a president like Joe Biden and a vice president like Kamala Harris, who will address the priority issues that matter the most to Americans. And their outreach tonight on those issues, I think, really presented a stark contrast and will also help drive voters to the polls, not only because they want to go vote against Donald Trump, but Tom, I think that they laid out reasons tonight where they're going to drive people to the polls based on the things that matter the most to them.
And of course, we covered that moment when you welcomed Representative Gabby Giffords back to the House floor after her recuperation and recovery. But here was her moment tonight. Let's show an excerpt and get your reaction.
Words once came easily. Today, I struggle to speak. But I have not lost my voice. America needs all of us to speak out, even when you have to fight to find the words. We are at a crossroads. We can let the shooting continue, or we can act. We can protect our families, our future. We can vote. We can be on the right side of history. We must elect Joe Biden. He was there for me. He'll be there for you, too.
So when you saw that tonight, your reaction, Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Oh, I was just, you know, my heart was so full and I was smiling and just so proud of her. Gabby's resilience and knowing her like I do, how determined she is, you know, she believes with every fiber of her being and with the words that she uttered tonight. And that is not only because she's lived through this horrific experience, but also because she's an incredible leader who wants to help make sure that we rid this nation of the callous indifference of Donald Trump, who, you know, could have and still can do something about gun violence, but refuses to because he worships at the altar of the NRA, when we have an opportunity to really make some common sense gun safety reforms, like closing the background checks, check loopholes that we have in this country. Make sure that we can really keep guns out of the hands of people who by law shouldn't have them but can still get them. And that's why we have tens of thousands of people who are killed by gun violence every year. It doesn't have to be that way. And Americans are on our side, and I think they'll go to the polls and help make this choice so that we can make a real difference on this.
But Congressman Tom Davis, we heard from the president again this week on the campaign trail in Wisconsin. Tomorrow he'll be in Pennsylvania saying that the Democrats are going to take your guns away.
Well, I think that's been a constant theme. Look, the gun issue is very divisive. When I came into Congress, it was not a partisan issue. But as we've looked at these alignments, as I've talked about the last couple nights, the Republican Party of John Kasich and Christy Todd Whitman is not the same party it is. Say the parties have realigned. Debbie, I was explaining the Republican base has migrated from the country club to the country. And with that, I think they've picked up the gun mantra. It's a very polarizing issue, depending where in the country you are. I also want to just add that I think despite the best aspirations of political leaders to try to unite the country, it's very closely divided on a number of these cultural and social issues at this point. I know from a Democratic perspective, they look at Obama, President Obama, as a uniter, but you've got to look, the voters in the two midterms that he had gave the Democrats devastating losses, putting a check on the president, because when you move fast, when you have rapidity of change, you get reactions to that. And it's very difficult to do this in a unifying way. And I suspect if the Democrats are successful this time in controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency, that you'll see the same kind of thing in the midterm swing back. Change is always important in politics and in governance. Constancy is something in a rapidly changing world, is something that you need to look beyond. But how quickly you change, people at the point of the spear think sometimes it's going too slow. And if you look at the historical law of relative deprivation, things don't move fast enough, expectations get risen. And at the other end, people dig in and say, what about my status? How am I threatened on that? And this is being expressed all over the world, and I think we're seeing it in these conventions and in this campaign as well.
So, Congresswoman, how do the Democrats, if hypothetically you get the House, Senate, and the White House, you find that equilibrium that there isn't the overreach that Tom Davis is talking about?
Well, Speaker Pelosi, who is the best tactician and strategist legislatively that America has known, I think we'll learn, from some of our experiences. You know, we won the majority. She was Speaker when President Obama was elected, and we did have, some learning curve in how to calibrate the issues that we took on. But what we did by passing the Affordable Care Act and giving health care to 20 million Americans was not only historic, but it was cataclysmic in the way it changed the lives. And so making sure that we do strike that balance is going to be important. At the same time, I want to just point out that I think this election is not only going to be an election where Americans go to the polls and want to end this long national nightmare that we've lived through since Donald Trump became president, but I think you're going to see the security moms, just like we had soccer moms back when in 1996 when Bill Clinton was reelected, that we have so many moms. And I think that this tonight in particular, when capped by Kamala Harris giving a fantastic speech and really laying out not only her life story, but the issues that are important to Americans that are going to, again, cause them to go to the polls, moms who want to make sure that their children can have good quality childcare, that they can keep their families healthy, that we can make sure that we don't have an environment that climate change and global warming that runs out of control. But they don't have to worry about sending their kids to the movies and not seeing them come home, or to school and never seeing them again. I think, and I've seen on the campaign trail myself, my own primary was just yesterday, and I've been talking to voters, up close and personal for the last few weeks and months, and there are so many women in particular that I think are going to go to the polls, and women vote in greater numbers than men and say, enough is enough. I want to make sure that I cast this vote for president on who's going to best take care of my family and their future, and economically, educationally, when it comes to keeping their families healthy and secure. That choice is going to be Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
And that's essentially what we heard from Speaker Pelosi. She was in San Francisco earlier tonight. This is what she told the Democratic National Convention.
Our nation faces the worst health and economic catastrophe in our history. More than 5 million Americans are infected by the coronavirus. Over 170,000 have died. The science-based action in the HEROES Act we enacted 3 months ago is essential to safeguard lives, livelihood, and the life of our democracy. And who is standing in the way? Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump.
So, Tom Davis, as you hear that, we had a caller earlier tonight saying that what he heard as a Republican is a lot of rhetoric, but not a lot of substance.
Well, the bill's substantive. It spends $3.2 trillion. That's a lot of money. There were some things in that package that had really nothing to do with the coronavirus. And I think Republicans want to look, they passed the PPP early on. That has been a salvation for millions of Americans. Donald Trump signed it. They have not been able to get together on this package because, again, I think you saw a Democratic overreach in the House at this point. The Republicans in the Senate put out what they call a skinny bill package today that I think goes to after some of the essentials. I think the tragedy for everybody is the parties weren't able to get together on a CARES 3.0 package or whatever they call it, the HEROES Act. They haven't been able to come together on that as they did earlier. As a result of that, people are missing checks. And look, I think both sides have some valid arguments why the other party's at stake. From an American, and that's why Donald Trump was forced to basically put executive orders out there because Congress wouldn't act. These orders don't go nearly as far as legislation would go. I hope the parties can get together on this.
One of the headlines from thehill.com, Hillary Clinton saying this was her I told you so moment, her speech from her home in Chappaqua, New York.
For 4 years, people have told me, I didn't realize how dangerous he was. I wish I could do it all over. Or worse, I should have voted. Look, this can't be another woulda, coulda, shoulda election. If you vote by mail, request your ballot now and send it back right away. If you vote in person, do it early. Become a poll worker. Most of all, no matter what, vote.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, your reaction.
Well, she's absolutely right that it is absolutely critical that every method possible when it comes to making this decision and ensuring that we can end this long national nightmare that we've had over the last almost 4 years with Donald Trump at the helm of this country, we need to make sure that we vote by mail or we vote early or we vote in person. Any method possible, but don't take this precious right for granted, because we can see what the consequences are when people, you know, either cast blame, wish that some things had been different. We have to make sure that every time we have an opportunity to decide who should lead this country, that we fully think through the consequences of making the wrong choice or not making our choice at all because it wasn't absolutely perfect and didn't work out the way we want.
Tom Davis, is
that's important?
I'm sorry, please finish.
Go ahead. I'm fine. Thank you.
Tom Davis, is the president trying to cast doubt on the election results in November?
No, I don't think so. But what I do see at this point is we saw a number of states having difficulty on the absentee ballots, long counts, ballots being discarded, being disqualified across the country. There is that potential in November where the votes will not be counted on election night. That casts doubt on it. I'm comfortable we'll get an honest count out of this. But you're changing rules in a number of states and states that have not shown the capacity to be to deal with mail order ballots before. And I think that raises a legitimate concern across the board.
One other moment from the convention tonight. Again, the headline tomorrow is going to be the nomination of Senator Kamala Harris. She is from South Asian and Jamaican descent, tonight accepting the VP nomination.
Donald Trump's failure of leadership has cost lives and livelihoods. If you're a parent struggling with your child's remote learning, or you're a teacher struggling on the other side of that screen, you know what we're doing right now is not working. And we are a nation that is grieving the loss of life, the loss of jobs, the loss of opportunities, the loss of normalcy, and yes, the loss of certainty.
Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I want to pick up on her point of the loss of normalcy. How big of a factor do you think that will be in this election?
I think it's going to be a major factor. I think that the anxiety that has been sowed in so many families' hearts, whether you are an immigrant family, that has been unnerved and upended by Donald Trump's horrendous policies on immigration, or a family who's been affected by COVID-19, or a family that has is worried that because you have a pre-existing condition, and Donald Trump has his attorney general fighting in court to get the Affordable Care Act thrown out as unconstitutional, and potentially leave you with no health care, with a life-threatening condition. On issue after issue, Donald Trump has made people feel less secure, less confident that they're going to be okay. And that the important thing about the ticket that we have on the Democratic side with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is that Joe Biden does care. He exudes caring. And he'll be able to restore Americans' confidence that we have a leader in the White House who is going to make everything okay. Joe Biden talks about his father, you know, telling him through his life. I've heard him tell the story so many times that, honey, we're going to be okay. You know, he was going to move to Delaware from Pennsylvania and get a job, and that he would send for his family later on when everything was all set. And we need a president. And Americans, after having their confidence shaken, fear instilled in their hearts that they're not going to be okay, and that this president actually doesn't even have their best interests at heart, making sure that we can restore that confidence and let people know that it is going to be okay because Joe Biden's at the helm with Kamala Harris by his side, that's going to be what drives people to the polls on November 3rd.
Tom Davis, how do you respond to that and your general thoughts on day three of this convention?
Well, clearly Democrats don't have confidence in Donald Trump. They were out the Saturday after the election when he was elected with a big march on Washington, and I think never came to grips with the fact that he had won the election. When you look at the polling and you ask people, are you voting for Donald Trump or for Joe Biden, you have a much higher percent are voting for Trump than voting for Biden. Much of Biden's vote is against Donald Trump. So as I said, I think we have to face it. He's been a polarizing figure. But he had unemployment down to the lowest recorded unemployment in 50 years prior to this COVID virus coming in. And holding him accountable for everything that's going on in this country, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, oh, he shut the economy down, but we're going to follow science and let people out. It doesn't work. There's a yin and a yang to this kind of thing, and there's an appropriate balance. I think he's done the right thing in treating, letting states make some of those decisions because we are such a diverse country on this. And I don't know a political leader anyway, whether it's a Democratic governor in New Jersey and New York, which have your highest death rates, or in rural states, that did this thing exactly right. We've learned as we've gone on. But I think if you want the economy to come back, people are going to take a look at his record and what he did economically for all classes of the population, white, black, brown, where we had the lowest unemployment rates in 50 years, and say, when we want to come back, who is the best able to come back? Somebody who wants to keep taxes low and regulations down, or somebody who wants to raise taxes and up regulation? The problem for the Republicans in our party is, how do we get to that argument in a COVID-19 environment at this point where that continues to be the major issue? Donald Trump didn't bring this into the country. He wanted to close the borders down with China when Joe Biden was saying it was racist to do that. So, but the Democrats have, I think, understood as the incumbent president, they're going to go after him on this issue, and the public will decide. And I think this campaign and the debates are going to make a big difference as these get articulated in this, and Vice President Biden comes out of the basement and has to answer some basic questions. But for the Democrats at this point, if Trump can't draw them out and draw some divisions on this and make this an issue campaign, it's going to have a bad ending for us.
And Congresswoman, a nonpartisan question to you as an aside, as a former DNC chair, do you think this week and next week will forever change party conventions?
You know, I think that they will. That they will change this week and next week will change conventions in a significant way. It remains to be seen. I don't think that by choice either party would make a decision not to do much of the convention in person. Having that connection, being able to organize and get people motivated and fired up, needs a crowd. And politics is a very touchy-feely, contact sport. Contact in the sense that it's all about people, and you are much better able to connect with people in person. But also, as I said at the outset of our discussion, you know, the reach that you have with a lot of these conventions being virtual, and being able to really showcase things that are sort of tired and need updating in the in-person version was a real opportunity. But I do have to say that I just want to disagree with Tom on you know, his rosy picture of Donald Trump. And I speak as a mother whose youngest daughter started her senior year of high school today in front of a computer in our house. And that's because the entire school district at home has had to start classes online this semester because Donald Trump has refused to create a national testing strategy with contact tracing and making sure that we had a program to isolate people so that we could allow our governors state by state to make decisions about how to slowly and carefully reopen the economy without having people who had the virus or didn't know they had the virus circulate with the virus now running rampant through our country. So that's the kind of poor judgment and lack of caring and callous indifference that Donald Trump has that has to end so that we can make sure we have someone who's competent and that will reinstate confidence and our nation's health, both economically and physically. We can restore that once again.
We will continue this conversation again tomorrow night. Tom Davis, former Republican congressman from Northern Virginia, and Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat from Florida, to both of you. Thanks for being part of C-SPAN's coverage.
Thanks.
And a reminder, we'll hear from some former Democratic presidential candidates, including Senator Cory Booker tomorrow evening and the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg, and Michael Bloomberg, and of course, the nomination and the speech by Joe Biden. It's all available on the many C-SPAN platforms, including on the web at cspan.org, the free C-SPAN radio app, and on C-SPAN Radio.